Hey, nice to have you aboard this week for the podcast. Before we get to my guest, sponsors helped me bring you this podcast, so I appreciate you supporting them. My really good sponsor that I really like, deepdiscount.com. I've been buying a lot of stuff on the site, and if I didn't believe in it, I wouldn't have them as a sponsor. Appreciate you supporting them and checking out what they've got. They've got everything on sale that you can think of, movies, TV shows from all different eras. They've got apparel, they've got music, a lot of cool stuff. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Click on the link there for deepdiscount.com. It'll take you right to their site. Go through my site to get to their site. And they've got everything. They've got this really cool I Love the 90s sale right now, which I'm psyched about because 90s, that's my wheelhouse, you know. I had the bouffant hair and the gold chain. I'm Italian. I'm from Rhode Island, you know. The hair, the gold chain, the fluorescent orange unbuttoned shirt, and the white pants. I was a creamsicle with chest hair, basically. But I got, under the I Love the 90s sale, the original MacGyver TV series, $50. It's awesome. It's old school. You know what I mean? It's really cool. This is the guy that can get out of a jam just with anything that he has handy. And I use it. I learned from it. I got stuck in my parents' furniture store. I got locked in. And I got out using a tampon and a pineapple. So it works. It's the I Love the 90s sale. And they've got new releases, too, by the way. This week, Ryan Gosling stars as Neil Armstrong in First Man. It's a 4K Ultra HD. It's based on the biopic about Neil Armstrong. In the wake of a family tragedy, Armstrong becomes a major player in NASA's bid to see that the U.S. finally pulls ahead of the Soviet Union in the space race. It's a really cool movie. I saw it. Gosling's great. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com. Click on the Deep Discount logo and go get some great deals. And enjoy Howie Mandel. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. For first-timers, welcome. Very excited to have on a comedian, actor, producer, award-winning game show host, and somebody I've really admired for a long time because he's done a lot of really cool stuff in this business, Howie Mandel. Hey, Howie, how are you?
I seem to be okay.
I'm okay. I also saw you recently on Tanked with the guys getting a tank put in, and it was really funny, and I really... And first of all, on St. Elsewhere, you're a really good actor. I remember watching that show, and I didn't really know you. I think you were coming out of Canada for the most part, and you were funny. But like, I remember to this day, like the dramatic scenes, like you would be able to make that turn really easily. Did you have like formal drama training at?
No, I have no training and no aspirations to even be in the business. So I got into stand-up comedy on a dare, and I was already a stand-up comic when I got to St. Elsewhere. And I already kind of blew up a little bit. I did a Young Comedian special. On the Young Comedian special, it was me, Jerry Seinfeld, Richard Lewis, Harry Anderson, Maureen Murphy. It was hosted by the Mothers Brothers. That kind of blew me up a little, and I was playing theaters. And then I saw the natural progression of anybody's career that was doing okay as a young comic. Was to do sitcoms, and I went and had a general meeting at MGM, who was the production company, and they were, you know, they did the Bob Newhart show, Mary Tyler Moore, and as luck would have it, the woman who was casting Molly LaPata said, "Can you act?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know." These guys, and I read these guys, said, "You got to come down the hall," and I went down the hall, and I read for these guys, and they said, "Thank you," and I went home, and my wife said, "How'd it go?" I go, "You know what, I don't know that it went that well, but what I read was not that funny, so I'm okay with it." And I get a call an hour later to go down and meet with the network, with Brandon Tartikoff, who was the king of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a Friday, and I started on Monday, and I remember showing up Bruce Paltrow, one of his dad, was the executive producer, and I said, "Hey, listen, I'm not an actor, and I see these people on the set. You think I should go take lessons?" Because you just entered the best acting college you'll ever be in, because I was surrounded by Phil Daniels and amazing, all these people that were writing for the theater people. You know, I'm a replacement. They had been shooting the show for 7 days, shut it down, and recast.
Wow.
The first assistant, but I was the first assistant that anybody saw. That's the character that I played, and it ran for 6 years. And I always felt bad about the guy I replaced. Like, he ended up doing okay and got an Academy Award nomination, and maybe I didn't get an Academy Award. You know, David Paymer.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
David Tamer was the original physicist, and I took this.
Oh, wow.
But not until I did, so then I did that, and then I did Saturday morning cartoons. But everybody, you know, that watched Bobby's World, there were young mothers with their kids, with Sam, the guys from Bobby's World. Then there were people that knew me from State Alpha, and there were people that knew me from stand-up comedy and cable specials. And then not until I did Deal or No Deal did all those people come together and realize I was the same.
Wow.
Doing all those. And that's been my biggest success. In fact, on Wednesday nights on CNBC, there's a brand new updated Deal or No Deal 2.0, which is a smash. And every Wednesday night, you should tune in because I tweet along live with the show. And then also, and this is what we're talking about, you know, after all this time, I've always been on the road, and I've always maintained a stand-up career, and I've always done concerts, and I do hundreds of dates a year. And but I think I haven't been on television as a stand-up for 20 years, so people don't know. I have people come up to me daily and go, you know, I used to love when you did stand-up. You should do stand-up again. And as luck would have it, the lovely people at the Hard Rock Hotel in Atlantic City refurbished the hotel and opened up a comedy club called the Howie Mandel Comedy Club. Would you like to come down to the opening? And not only did I go down to the opening, but I brought cameras with me, and that is the Howie Mandel special that premieres at 18th on Showtime.
Yeah, that's great. Just for listeners, at the time we're airing this, it just premiered, and actually two of my buddies are working at your club this week, Tom Cotter and Tom Rhodes the following week, both comics who are good friends of mine who are working at the club.
Love that. Cotter's amazing on America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
You know, he's one of the best there is, and Tom Rhodes I love too.
Yeah.
Great headline act at the club all the time, and nobody's more thrilled and blessed than me to have my name on the club.
Yeah, and when you're doing your stand-up, I was reading sort of is, you know, it's a mix of you're married 40 years, you talk about family and your kids and marriage and all of that. Do you, are you finding sort of what we're all feeling a little bit as comics, like sort of the PC police, sort of like what you can say and what you can't say?
Absolutely, and you know, I talk about that in my act. You know, my inspiration in comedy when I first came out in the 70s to Los Angeles, I went to the Comedy Store and I watched Richard Pryor work each and every night cobbling together what eventually became Live on the Sunset Strip, which I still believe is one of the most seminal, you know, comedy shows.
Wait, back. Hang on a second. I'm sorry. You saw him, you were with him and working with him, a contemporary of his, when he was working it through that material for that special? Wow. That's
crazy. I was there every night. I wasn't working with him. I was watching. And I'm not a contemporary. He was older than me. I was a young comic who came to the Comedy Store, but I watched him get on stage every night and write that.
Wow.
Put together that set. And find the line, step over the line, back up. The lines were much further away than they are today. But it was fun. That was what the comedy clubs were. And, you know, we didn't really have social media at the time, so you know, even sitting in, you know, off stage amongst comedians, you know, you could say things in the room. You know, that's what the Aristocats was about, the Aristocrats, the movie, you know.
Right.
The filthiest jokes amongst other comics and everything. And now the PC police are just taking away the art form and the freedom of speech.
Yeah.
This thing is in the vein of, I was just joking, or I was just writing a routine, or I just... And I also believe that comedy, for the most part, should be the ability to cross that line in the name of humor.
Absolutely.
You know, I believe in context versus content.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't matter what you say, it's what you mean by it or what you're trying to get across. If you're just trying to be funny, even if it doesn't land as a joke, you're trying to be funny, then I'm not really offended. But that being said, you know, I'm delighted to be part of, you know, Deal or No Deal in AGT, and I don't want to get thrown off of it.
No, I hear you. I mean, it has gotten, I like to, you know, I like to talk to people in the audience. I also work on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and I'll sometimes do the warm-up, and my warm-up is basically an improv where I'll just bring people on stage and talk about let them talk about their lives and tell stories. And I have a one-man show I'm doing right now on Broadway, the same thing. But the point is, after I did this warm-up, a woman came up to me and said, I really enjoyed what you did, but you seem to spend a little bit more time talking to the men than the women, and maybe you could do it 50-50. And I was like, you know what I said to her? I just said, ma'am, you're being inappropriate. And she went, what? And then she had this look on her face like, no, that's not how this script is supposed to go. See, what I'm supposed to say is, you didn't spend enough time, and you were supposed to go, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am, I didn't mean it, and please like me. And I'm like, ma'am, you're completely wrong. Did you not get that it was a complete improv up there, and you can't plan this? Anyway, I don't want to make this about me, but I really happy to hear you say you do have to push back a little bit, because I think that is part of the role of stand-up. It is a bastion of unedited speech, and I think that's great. And were you working out your material for quite a while? Had you sort of had this idea of a special in your head?
I've been on the road. I didn't really plan on doing a special, and obviously I've been on the road. I've been doing hundreds of nights a year. I didn't stop.
Yeah.
I've never stopped.
Yeah.
And I was doing it anyhow, so, I had it.
Yeah.
It was a big decision to kind of, just hand it over, to Showtime and to do it. But it also forced me now to write.
Mm.
Now I have to write something so that when you come see me live, you're not seeing me.
Right. Again. Right. It's funny. You talked about prior, because Jay Leno is actually, he's how I got started. He hired me as a fax writer, email writer, as a freelancer. And then that led to me going into stand-up full time. But he said he would work at the time at the Comedy Store. And he said, if you could follow Richard, then you knew you had some good jokes, because Richard would usually kill. And then he said, then you would know, and I would want to go up after Richard, because I would be able to see what jokes would really work for me, because if one of my jokes worked after Richard, then it would work. And I guess that's the case. I mean, you were there, but I assume that was the case.
No, but it is. And that's what I learned at the Comedy Store. I was around at the time with Jay, and I knew Jay at the time. That was the first place where I saw where people legitimately, I think that they do that at the Cellar here too, but I was, as a young comedian, I was aware that those were the places where you either work it out or you put yourself in a real tough bind by going on after Richard Pryor, because you legitimately wanted it. It wasn't about killing, when you get hired in a place and you want to go, you just want to kill, and you want to show your A material. Where do you work that out, and when does that happen? You can't sit alone in your room on a
right.
Well, that's how it starts. And write it and know that you got a killer act. How do you know you have a killer act? You have to put yourself in a tough position.
Right.
You have to work it out. And
right.
It is work.
Right.
And there's only certain people that were, and that's why Jay Leno, if you look at all the people that did that work, including Richard Pryor and Jay Leno, they're the people that really made it, because they worked hard and they deserve and they crafted and put together a career.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And, I was watching TV recently. You were talking about bringing Deal or No Deal back, which is really great, and you're really great on it. And you told I thought it was a really endearing story about how it came about. And if you don't mind repeating it, because I thought it was very honest and it was very genuine, and it was endearing that I guess you weren't thinking about doing that, and you got a phone call, and you were hemmed and hawed about it, and talked to your wife, and what. If you remember that.
But that's the first, not this incarnation. I've been clawing and scraping to get my way back on TV doing Deal or No Deal at CNBC. That this is the very first time was in 2005. And in 2005, my career, there's ebbs and flows, and my career was waning, and I wasn't selling a lot of tickets in theaters, and I wasn't, so comedy was kind of waning, and I wasn't getting parts on television. And as luck would have it, I got a call from my manager saying, NBC is doing this big game show, do you want to host? And I said, no. no hesitation.
Right.
Never. You have to put yourself in the mind frame of 2005. In 2005, there wasn't one comic hosting any game shows.
Yep.
Not only was there not one, but when your currency is irony, being a game show host was the punchline, not It would. I said, there's no way.
Yeah.
I'll back in about a half an hour. They go, please, this is huge. It's all over the world. NBC has never done anything. No news network has done anything like this. We're going to do 5 hours for a whole week. We're going to do 5 hours of broadcasting on in prime time. And I went, no. And they came back and they said, can we just show you? And I said, you know what? I'm not going to go to the studio, but I'm in the deli, in the valley. If you want to bring the game and show me or come and pitch me, the guy comes and pitch me. And, you know, this is after the fact. So I don't know that people can really see this in their mind, but there's no game.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there was no trivia. There's no skill.
Right.
He told me he's going to have like 26 models opening cash. Did you take it? And I said, no, I didn't take it. She goes, why? I go, because it's going to ruin my career. She goes, where were you a minute ago? He goes, I was at the deli. Where are you now? She goes, this is your career. Take the deal, you idiot. And then I started watching, you know, I started doing a little bit of research. And the last comedians that had done a show was Groucho Marx, did You Bet Your Life.
Yeah.
You know, and Johnny Carson had done. So I asked them, I phoned them up, and I said, can I hire some friends and writers? And they said, okay. And I hired writers. And throughout the weekend, this was a Friday, and I was going to start on a Monday. And I thought, we came up with some little bits and gags, and I thought, where am I going to be able to showcase myself like this in prime time on NBC? I'll be funny. I'll be witty. Maybe this will restart my career and sell a few more tickets.
Yeah.
This will be good. As luck would have it, I came out the very first game. They said, ladies and gentlemen, Howie Mandel, this is Deal or No Deal. I walk out, and as a host, I introduced the first guest. I'll never forget her. I've done over 600 episodes with Karen Vann. And Karen Vann comes out, and I said, Karen, tell me about yourself. And Karen told me that she's a single mother of three kids who's never owned a home, and she doesn't have health insurance. And here are her three kids right here. And you know, I noticed, and you may notice this when you're doing Colbert, that when people aren't in television or aren't on stage, when you bring them down on the stage, there's a glaze that comes over people.
Yes.
You know, all these lights and all these cameras. And they're in a place. But I also realized when I was talking to her, I saw this glaze over her. She wasn't really focused, and I was cognizant of the fact that even if you walk out of here with $50,000, which is huge, that's a life-changing amount.
Yes.
A life from where you're from, not New York, not L.A., to this woman. You could buy a house. You could buy insurance. Your life could drastically change. And yeah, I just remember it because I did the first offer, and she really didn't make any eye contact with me. It was like $10,000. She went, no deal, without even thinking. And I'm thinking, how do you just turn down $10,000? So then it became I became empathy kicked in, you know, the human being first.
Mm.
Human being first.
Mm.
And I'm a father, and I'm a husband, and it became, and that changed my case. I started talking to her, like, wanting to get her attention. Didn't want to distract her with any silly comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So I started with this, that's how I talked to her, you know, and the offer is $41,000. I just wanted her to listen to me, and I wanted her to get out of there with a better opportunity than she had come in with. And the problem was that I wasn't doing any comedy. When I taped the show, and I said to my wife, I've never been more embarrassed in my life. It's the first time I've been on stage and on camera.
Yeah.
And I've done absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And we got in a plane and I flew out of town to the Caribbean. And I get a call saying that it went through the roof. What went through the roof? The show. And the next night, even bigger. And it became a phenomenon. And it was out of something I didn't want to do and didn't feel I did well.
But I bet you it became a phenomenon because of the empathy that you showed. I bet you because
it made me comfortable. It actually helped me in my comedy too, because it made me comfortable just living on stage. You know what I mean?
That's exactly, yeah. My director for my show, we have an 80-20 rule, because we're having people tell stories, and your instinct as a comic is to go for a laugh every 15 seconds. But if I did that, I'd be burying their stories. So the 80-20 is just let it be real and human for 80% and trust that you'll find the comedy and it'll emerge organically. And it was uncomfortable for like the first few weeks, and then it was like, now it's fine. But I know exactly what you mean. Hey, listen, I know we got to wrap with you real quick. Can I ask you one more question if you don't mind? Was it true that you were expelled from high school for impersonating a school official and hiring a construction company to build an addition to the school? Was that like, is there anything true?
Yeah, I just acted impulsively.
I think it's great. Yeah.
But that's what I do, and one thing led to another, and I'm on your podcast.
Yeah.
Thrilled to be here.
Well, thank you. Showtime special, Howie Mandel presents Howie Mandel at the Howie Mandel Comedy Club, which I love for a title. 9 consecutive seasons as a judge on America's Got Talent. Of course, Deal or No Deal on CNBC. It's great to have you on, Howie. Thank you.
Good to be here.
All right, that was Howie Mandel. Great to have him on. Hope you enjoyed it. And my one-man show is still running on Broadway. Paul Mercurio's Permission to Speak. Go to telecharge.com, get some tickets, and come on out. We're going to be going through February and maybe extending it into March. And so if you're in the New York area, come and hang out. It's right in Times Square. And go to telecharge.com and use the code PMFAN. PMFAN, you get 50% off. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thanks.